Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Umbrella Hour. Another good episode coming up. Dr. Ann Goldbauer will not be with us today. They will be returning in the next episode. So it's just going to be me, Xander Keg, your host today. And I am here with Chase Jones Esquire. So let me tell you a little bit about Chase. Chase is an attorney. They've been practicing for 16 years. They focus on the needs of the LGBTQ plus community, particularly in family law. They are living in Oregon, but they used to live in Texas, and they're licensed in Texas, Oregon, Washington, and Florida. So they're going to be discussing the practical implications of the new laws banning trans care and access to public spaces and how to navigate those spaces. Welcome to the show, Chase.
Thank you. It's glad to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start off for the audience how we know each other. So we talked a little bit before this, trying to remember because I have a terrible memory and you have a great one because you were able to pull up that we first met each other and interacted online in one of those FTM Yahoo groups. There was a national one, maybe more than one, but I think I was only in one. And then we met in person in 2013 when you were in San Francisco for the Lavender Law Conference. So that's quite a while ago. So thank you for bringing back that memory. And I'm really glad to be able to have this conversation with you. We've met in person since then. I'm also now near Portland, Oregon. So we met in Portland a few months back. So it's nice to be living in the same location. We'll have to spend more time together once things start to settle down a little bit. So with all of our moves and things.
Absolutely.
All right. So you took a pretty non-traditional path into law and you became an attorney at the age of 40, and that was after spending 20 years in the information technology field and a little bit of work even doing teaching, right, as a teacher. Let's talk a little bit about what was your motivation for going to law school after a 20-year career in infotech?
Well, it's an interesting journey, and it has to do with aging more than anything. When I got into IT back in the late 80s, early 90s, laptops truly took your entire lap. Like they were huge. And there weren't college degrees for this stuff. Most of it was a very fluid technology that just kept growing. Once AOL started sending out their little discs to here's the internet, it's the next great thing. In the early 90s, people started buying computers. They started using them at work more often. So I taught myself and I did the certifications and that kind of stuff. And that was great until about the early 2000s. And then, of course, when colleges get on board and they decide everybody needs a degree to do something, and then people have expectations. So the clients, after a certain period of time, started getting to this point where they would ask you, do you have a degree in this? I guess at some point I figured, well, I'm going to have to get a degree in something. The IT market was really becoming saturated by a bunch of young people, and I wasn't that young anymore. So I thought, well, if I have to go to college and get a degree, because I was 31 when I went back to school, and I got my associate's degree, my bachelor's degree, and my law degree in 9 years. So I figured if I had to go back to school, why not go with something a little more traditional that made a little bit more money? Because at the time, I wasn't a programmer. I was a hardware guy. I did networking and that kind of stuff. But I just didn't want to compete with the younger folks. So I figured, well, law's been around forever, and maybe I could have a different kind of impact in the lives of people. And then by the time I got to the end of law school, my involvement in the LGBTQ plus community had become much more significant than it was when I was younger as well. And it just made sense to have some kind of education that would allow me to help other people because that's my nature. It's kind of who I am. So that's how I got there. And then on the eve of my 40th birthday, I graduated and took the bar exam in 2009, the worst year to graduate from law school because you couldn't get a job to save your life. And it was even harder if you were 40.
What was going on in 2009 that you made that?
It was the housing market crash from 2008, 2009. And so we were the first class to graduate after, for the first time in history, some of these very, very large law firms laid people off by the thousands. It had a hell of an impact on the employment market. And it made it very difficult for new lawyers to get entry-level positions because they were saturated with experienced lawyers who were taking less money because they needed a job. And it's a whole phenomenon. There was article after article written about it. And the law schools were caught off guard. The career centers were caught off guard. Like nobody was ready for this. So there were a whole bunch of us. And, you know, we every time we get together, sometimes we commiserate about being stuck in this class of 2009, where everybody was had these great plans and had done their career stuff and then walked out and worked at McDonald's or Starbucks. I worked at Starbucks for a while. I had to have kids. I had to pay for food. But it's changed over the years since then. It's been 16 years now and almost 17 years, I guess. And it's been quite the wild ride. I'm not doing anything I thought I'd be doing at this time. I always tell the young people that don't make plans. Just have an idea, but don't make plans because you never know where you're going to end up down the road.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm about to turn 60, and quite frankly, I didn't think I'd live past 30. I didn't have a future in mind for myself. There's a lot of different reasons for that, but once I hit 30, I was like, oh, well, now what do I do? So I went to college. I'm like, how hard can it be? I'll just go do this thing called college. I was done, and I was like, well, now what do I do? Maybe I'll go to graduate school. How hard can that be? And so I was trying to find a way to figure out, yeah, what am I going to do when I grow up? But I was already 30 years old, and I had been in the military and law enforcement. So I knew that I wanted to go in a different direction. But like you, I also am a helper, right? And so I ended up in social work. I took a slight detour in law school and decided, oh, no, wrong detour. Let me get back on the main road and see what's coming up. What's interesting is that you're talking about this timeline that it reminds me that you're mentioning 2008, 2009, the housing market crash. But in the early 2000s, I mean, wasn't that also? I can't remember if that was the dot-com boost or bust, right? The boom or the bust. Something was happening right around then, too, that probably was impacting working in your field of information technology.
A little bit. I think between those years, I mean, the best to me in my life, I'm 56. So in my lifetime, the best years, especially for traveling abroad, were in the 90s. I did a lot of traveling in the early to mid 90s, loved it. And it was pretty easy back then. But then after 9/11 in 2001, things changed for everybody everywhere, but particularly here in the United States. And we had the, what was it, 2000, everybody thought their computers were going to stop working because of their clocks. And
Y2K.
so we survived that. And then, and the internet really was starting to grow. People were transitioning from pagers to cell phones. I think the first iPhone came out in 2005. It was, I think, just a really fast-paced change that happened in a very short period of time. And technology has done that, is accelerated, which was another reason why I thought, let me go with a more traditional career, because as fast as the technology was changing, my old brain wasn't going to be able to keep up with that. And now the young kids were coming in, and this stuff was stuff they grew up with. So they walk out, they go to college, they get an IT or an IS degree or something like that, and it's nothing for them because their whole lives they've been doing that. I can go back 25 years, and I remember what it was like not to have a cell phone, to hear your mom yell down the street at you for you to come home at dark,
Oh yeah. Well, that's another thing we have in common is that we're Gen X kids, right? And so in some ways, it's a very scrappy entrepreneurial generation. A lot of the companies like Microsoft and Dell, and these are very young boomers or older Gen Xers like us. So there is a certain scrappiness, as I said, to our generation. So we're maybe somewhat better equipped to deal with some of those housing market crash, but coming out of law school, that pivot into, okay, what do I need to do, right? To earn some money, to put food on the table, but keep working towards what the ultimate goal is. Thinking about Y2K, I graduated college in 1999, and I did do one of my final papers in one of my courses on Y2K. So I'm remembering what a big deal that was.
It
I
was.
was looking forward to my student loan disappearing, but I was really bummed that that didn't happen
Yeah,
when
we're
the
not even going
clocks
to start on
turned.
that conversation.
Okay, so you finished law school, but the doors aren't necessarily swinging wide open because of the housing market crash. Ultimately, you find yourself now in family law. Was that always the goal?
It wasn't what I wanted to do. Originally, I wanted to be a prosecutor. And when I was in law school, all my internships were either working for the state or working for the public defender's office. I did most of my internships in Florida. My mother was retired and lived there at the time. So she would watch the kids for me over the summer so I could work for free for someone so I could get some experience. And I actually had a job lined up in Indian River County. And that was the year that they slashed all the state city budgets in half, the county budgets, everything got smashed. And so not only did they have a vacancy that they were ready to fill that they had to let go of, but they were going to have to get rid of another attorney because their budget literally was slashed in half. They went from 12 million a year to 6 million a year.
Wow.
And they were going to have to figure out how to pay all these people. So about 3 weeks before I was ready to take the bar exam, I got an email. After I'd done all the interviews, everything was ready to go. We were on the spot. I had the job. I knew it. And the managing attorney sent me an email and he's like, dude, so sorry. We can't. So I was flopping around trying to figure out what to do. And then I ended up doing a lot of contract work for a while after Starbucks. First, I couldn't get a job. I had too much education, too much experience, but no one was hiring. And then even the places, like I had a friend that worked at CVS and they were going to let me be a night manager. And the manager was ready to hire me, but the corporate people where that managed the online applications wouldn't let my application go through to him. So he couldn't hire me. I was like, okay, but I have to eat and I have three kids, three teenage boys that have got to eat and I have a mortgage and I have all this stuff. So I literally walked into Starbucks and walked up to a manager and I said, I know I'm way overqualified for this job, but I have got to have something and I'll take every hour you got. So I ended up working there for a couple of years. And then I found my way into doing contract legal work and really was reviewing documents and stuff like that. Shortly after that, then I became an actual public school teacher. I needed benefits, I needed a regular paycheck. And I thought, well, they have the public loan forgiveness, so I'll just do this for 10 years and pay it off. And then that lasted for 8 years. I couldn't make it to 10. That there's a whole other story about that, but people in public education are very difficult to work with. So finally, I'd already started practicing on my own. And the family law thing came around mostly because everybody I knew has a family law problem. They're either divorced, they've got kids, they want to get divorced, you know, they're fighting with their ex over this, that, and the other thing. And every time I turned around, people kept coming to me saying, hey, do you do this too? And eventually I was like, yep, I do that. Just
Right.
why
Yes.
not, right? So that's kind of how I fell into it. And then I stayed in it because I started to center my practice around the LGBTQ plus community. There is a huge need on an individual basis. And I know we have tons of different organizations across the country and probably internationally. But here in the United States, we have the Transgender Law Center, we've got Lambda Legal, we've got NCLR, we've got the Transgender Defense and Legal Education Fund. There's all of these organizations, but they do impact litigation. They won't take your case unless your case is going to change the lives of thousands of other people. And the reason for that is simple. It's money. They're all supported by donations. These are all nonprofits. And in order for them to make that money have the greatest impact, hence the impact litigation, they try to take the kinds of cases that will change the most for as many people as possible. And particularly for trans folks, there's been a slew of litigation over these last many years. I would say starting in 2016, 2015, when Trump was elected the first time, running up to today, although it's significantly worse now than it was back then, there have been a slew of cases that have really impacted. The Bostock case applied Title IX to employment, not just for trans people, but for gay people and pretty much anybody under the umbrella. We've had the Obergefell case that made marriage equality a thing across the country. So we've had some pretty huge outcomes. And seeing those kinds of impacts and then knowing that there's a whole other group of us in the community who need individual help. It's great that you change the world for all of these people over here and all those people over there, but I just came out as gay and my spouse doesn't like it and we're getting divorced and they're trying to keep my kids from me because they think if they tell the judge that I'm gay, that bias is going to kick in and they're going to think, okay, that's not the best place for your kids to be raised. So we're going to give them to the other parent. I mean, that kind of stuff. So once I started getting into that stuff, it made me feel good to know that I could go in there with my client and they would get a fair shake more than they would have if they'd gone in there by themselves. And so I just stayed with it. And now I'm here in Oregon trying to kickstart and build a practice here. I still practice back in Texas. I don't practice in Florida anymore, but I got my Washington license because I live on the border. It just made perfect sense. If you're going to live on the border, you might as well have both, right?
Absolutely.
So that's how I got into it. And I think one of the reasons that I stay is because I can see on a client by client basis the help that I'm able to provide and the families that I'm able to impact.
So let's talk a little bit then about specifically what kinds of advice, generally speaking, are you able to give, or maybe some hypotheticals around how people can or how people are navigating what's going on now. So I mentioned in the intro that the practical implications of the new laws banning trans care and access to public spaces here in the United States, but I know this is also happening in other countries. I know in England or Britain, perhaps, because it started in Scotland. So what are some of the ways that you are directly and indirectly helping individuals and families with navigating some of what's been coming down? So within the courts in the United States, right? So there's more than half of the states now have laws on the books that remove access to medical transitions for minors. So access to puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, or what some people call gender-affirming hormones or hormone replacement therapy, a lot of different language. There's also the laws around competing in collegiate and secondary school athletics, right? Perhaps even middle school. One of the recent cases that went up to the Supreme Court, the student is now in high school, but the case was brought when they were a middle school student. So it's not elite, but it is competitive because it's giving rankings and timings and awards and, yeah, scholarships. So it's not recreational sports out in the community that I know of. And then bathrooms, locker rooms, shower rooms, dressing rooms. There's also issues around single-sex spaces and facilities in addition to those spaces, domestic violence shelters, prisons. So a lot of issues. And again, not just in the United States, but elsewhere. Focusing on family law, right? I'm assuming maybe that you're working with or have worked with families that might have children that are impacted by this. And maybe you can talk just a little bit about that in a general way, just for us to be able to understand what's going on and how people can navigate, right? This isn't necessarily an all-lose situation, right?
We will be taking our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Xander Keg and his guest, Chase Jones, who has 16 years of experience focusing on the needs of the LGBTQ plus community, particularly in family law. Stay tuned. We will be back shortly after we play this commercial.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah, I think when we say family law, I've done tons of name and gender marker changes for people. I've done other types of support, domestic relationships that aren't codified in a marriage. At the end of the day, though, I'm the kind of lawyer who will give you the law, and then I'll tell you the but, and then here's some other things to think about, right? So, for example, I have several clients who are kids. And when Texas changed its laws, the first inkling of it came out September of 24, just before the election. The Department of Public Safety that manages driver's licenses and issues driver's licenses sent an email out to all of its offices, and I'm sure it was reported in all the national newspapers and stuff, basically saying that they were no longer allowed to change names and gender markers for trans people on their IDs and driver's licenses. And if somebody came in to ask for that with a court order, they were to make a copy of the court order and then email it to this special email address and then refuse to do it. So this is when things really started to get scary. So at the time in Texas, it was absolutely possible to change your name and gender marker by court order. We were lucky because in most states like Florida, jurisdiction is based on the county you live in. In Texas, you could go to any court in the state as long as you were a resident of the state. So most people went to Travis County, which is where Austin is. You did everything by mail, electronic filing. They never had to go to court. The clerk would email me back the orders. I'd give them to the client. The client go Social Security and driver's license office, change everything. It was great and pretty easy. And when this letter came out, everything changed. And especially for the kids, because the next thing that came out was a letter from the attorney general, who's allowed to give these opinion letters, but they're not law. But for some reason, people keep thinking they have to follow them. So then he decides that all court orders that have ever been issued in Texas to a trans person for name and gender marker changes are all void because the state had an interest in those cases and the state wasn't a party. So they were all void. Now, that is not the law. That is not how it works. None of that means anything, but anyways. So my advice started changing and it made it difficult because people would call me, do a consultation, and then I have to tell them, look, this is the way it used to be. This is what I used to be able to do for you. And right now I can't tell you whether it'll work or not. It's pretty similar with the folks that are struggling with their passports. If you were fortunate enough to renew your passport before 2024 or January of 25, I guess it is, good for you. If not, it's kind of a crapshoot. So the practical part of all of this and the advice that I generally give to most of the people I work with in the community, think things through from a perspective of not just the legal side of it, but the human side of it. So for example, Houston is a very blue bubble in the middle of a stupid red state. And there's a lot of those. Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, they're all very blue cities. The urban areas are usually pretty Democratic. So if you've got to do something with your driver's license, if you need to update your records somehow, go to the driver's license office in the neighborhood, because most likely the people working there are probably from the neighborhood or somewhere close by, and they do have some power to look past things. And I think that's what's happening at the national level, at the State Department with the passports. Some people are getting their passports back and nothing has changed. And some of them are getting it back. And what I'm thinking is that the clerk that got the passport application and looked it up, the one that changed the gender marker on that passport, has an attitude about trans people. And they are probably supporters of Trump and they probably believe in all the stuff they're hearing on the news. And so they switch it back. And the other guy who doesn't get their switch doesn't get their switch because that person went, man, these people are really being beat up on for no reason. I'm leaving that just the way it is. It's not like somebody's supervising every little tiny thing they're doing, right? So from a practical perspective, if you're dealing with identification issues, try to go, if you live in a state or a country where you can pick the office that you go to, find the offices with the people that will be sympathetic, people that will be, that'll care about you and that have some flexibility in how they do their jobs. When it comes to family matters, that can be more difficult because you're bound by the state and the county that you live in. So all divorces pretty much in the United States, jurisdiction is based on living in the state for 6 months and the county for 90 days. There's variations of that across the country, but it's pretty standard, at least 6 months in the state. So if you're living in a county that you know sucks, that you know has terrible judges, they're all biased and don't file for divorce, they're moved. Even if you have to go use your aunt, uncle, cousin's mom, somebody's address to make that your permanent address, once you've had that established, then go file for divorce. These are little things that you can do practically. As far as things like restrooms and stuff like that, from a legal perspective, those laws are really unenforceable. The only way to enforce them is for a cop to stop you at the door and tell you to drop your pants. And that's just never going to happen. That's just not going to happen. So, on a practical level, I tell people do what you've been doing. I really don't think anyone's going to get arrested. And actually, the people that seem to be struggling with this more now than anything, rather ironically, but kind of sad, are cisgender people who just happen to be a little different. So, like, for example, the 6 foot woman, they're not common, but they exist. And just by the nature of them being 6 feet, they walk into the women's room and somebody says something. And a lot of cisgender people are actually the ones being caught up in this, especially the bathroom stuff. And then remember, this whole focus really has nothing to do with trans men. It's really not impacting the trans male side of this the way it is the trans female side, because trans women are the target. At the end of the day, they are the targets because we live in a society full of people afraid of a penis. I mean, literally, that's the bottom line. And so we can drum up hysteria one direction, but it doesn't work when we try it the other way. If they try to, I don't even know that I've ever heard anyone say anything that would make me fear a trans man. I can't say in my experience all these years that that's ever been an issue. I know the trans guys tend to get, they try to use their transition to show off the absurdity of trying to police the bathroom, because if they go where they were, if they walked in to the women's room, you'd be screaming and hollering because they have beards and just, it's really a one-way trip here, unfortunately. So I feel really bad for trans women. But the other thing I think that's most important, because if everybody, assuming that, and not everybody who's listening is part of the community, but we have allies too. And allies play a huge role in this, because the other practical piece of this is that you cannot stand by and watch someone being treated that way and say nothing. You have to say or do something. So if you
Hopefully, yeah.
have friends that will go with you, take them in the bathroom with you. If you have friends that will go with you to the DMV when you go do your driver's license, and you're worried that the guy behind the counter is going to give you attitude or is going to be a bigot or try to say something, bring your two tallest friends with you. It's amazing what people won't say when certain kinds of people are around. And then try your best to hang on, because the one thing that I do know, and it was really inspiring watching the election in Hungary the other day, the one thing I do know is that everything changes and this will not stay like this. I feel like it's like the moments around the civil rights movement when a lot of people got hurt and a lot of people were really ugly to other people, and there was a lot of hatred just for the color of your skin. But I think it was because more and more people realized that the color of your skin didn't have anything to do with who you were. And I think that's where we are now. We have, over the last, I would say, the last 20 years, being a member of the LGBT plus community has become normalized. It's okay. Most people don't care. It's okay to be proud of who you are. It's okay to say who you are in many places around the world now. And because of that, I think this is a period of time where the last of the bigots and the haters are desperately trying to hold on to that hate because they don't want to be wrong. And soon that'll pass and we'll be into a different place. You know,
Yeah,
Trump's not going to be around forever, so.
I mean, I also am more hopeful in that way because everything passes, right? This too shall pass. I have a slightly different lens that I apply to why things are the way they are now. I think it's partially due to the trans advocacy expanding into minors. I think that one of the things that the gay and lesbian community did really well, because we learned the lesson, which is leave the kids alone, right? And so with Anita Bryant and the Save Our Children campaign, and gay people were pedophiles, and you couldn't let a gay person be a school teacher, right? The Briggs Amendment in California, right? This was the killing of Harvey Milk. People were really freaking out about, and again, gay men, not much about lesbians, except maybe in family law, where the husbands or the fathers of the children, if they have them together, wanted to be sole custody parent and find them unworthy, right? That they weren't a good custodial parent. Of course, there were the GSAs, right? The Gay Straight Alliances that were in the high schools all around the country. And there had to be a teacher or administrator who was sort of the formal leader of the group. But I think that that happened in such a way that it didn't really make the national news. And so people didn't know that it was happening for the most part. I really think that it's like when we start stepping into talking about, talking with, working with, providing resources to other people's children, they get very upset about it. They become mama and daddy bears. Like they get on high alert. And so I think we might have brought a little too much attention. Well, I mean, I don't know if it was you and I, right? We weren't necessarily the big pundits of the community activism network. I don't think that helped us. It got too many people noticing us and then focusing all their attention on us. I was thinking about, I changed my birth certificate in the state of California and got my new driver's license and updated my social security and got a new passport in 2005. And I remember at that time, there was a resource I could go to online, the National Center for Transgender Equality that existed, and it had like every state how to do that. And it was a really great resource. Oh, it might have actually been the TS Roadmap website that Andrea James was running. Now it's called, I think, maybe Trans Map or Transgender Map, but it was either one of those. They were good resources around that time. And I remember that Texas was one of those states where you still couldn't change it for the most part, unless these small little areas, especially if you found your way through Judge Phyllis Fry's office or bench, but who is a trans woman judge in Texas. For
yeah,
a number
she
of years.
She didn't do that kind of law, though. She was a municipal judge. She did traffic tickets, really.
Yeah, but I think she had a law practice where they, yeah. And but I remember telling people at the time, if you can't change your birth certificate in the state where you were born, then get a passport.
Right.
Right. That was the alternative because the federal document superseded the state document and you never had to show a state birth certificate. And now that's changing, of course, because yes, some people are not getting their passports back, right? They're renewed passports or their initial passport with the sex marker that they want on it, an F versus an M or vice versa. I know I just read even just this morning that Caitlyn Jenner was reissued passport and it came with an M on it. So, I mean, that's
apparently
that's,
she's real mad about that. So,
even being famous, but I do know a handful of trans men who have M's on their passports and they recently got those. And I know that there's a similar issue that you described in Texas that has come up recently in Kansas. I know you don't practice there, but that's hit the news.
Yeah, the Kansas law is really fascinating.
Yeah.
I really don't know how they're going to work around it. I know that it's on hold. I believe the governor vetoed it or something, but it hasn't taken effect. The bigger one, the one that I think really we need to pay most attention to at the moment is Idaho.
What's going on in Idaho?
Idaho has made using the restroom a felony. And that law did pass and the governor did sign it. And it is actually active today, which is wild because Idaho is like right next door. So I'm not driving that way ever. Just because I'm not going to a state that has laws that are that crappy. But
is that any restroom or is it like the Florida law where it's public restrooms? And for people to understand, a public restroom doesn't mean any restroom that's outside of your home. A public restroom is a restroom in a government building, the library, the courthouse, airport. It doesn't mean the bathroom at Denny's or Starbucks or Cracker Barrel, right? It means public means government. So in Idaho, is it public restrooms or all restrooms that are outside of your personal dwelling?
It's all of them.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Now, so I don't know how they regulate
even
that.
Retail stores.
Yeah, I don't know how they regulate that. I don't even know how they enforce that law, but it is an all-inclusive. It's like a huge just sinkhole of bad. The thing about the bathroom bills in general, like Texas passed one last year, so now there's one in Texas. Texas came up with this brilliant idea some years ago. I don't know who, some lawyer who had more time on his hands, came up with this idea that the way you get around a Supreme Court telling you that you can't do something is you make sure that the state's not the one actually doing the enforcing. And so what happened, and this actually had to do with the abortion stuff, Texas passed a law that if you knew your neighbor was going out of state to get an abortion, this is a live actual law today, if you had any help with that, if you gave them money to drive out of town or to whatever, your neighbor can sue you. So the state can't come and get you. They can't enforce any of this. But the average Joe citizen has been given the right to sue. $10,000 a pop every time. You can sue over and over again. There's no limit. So they're letting people police other people.
We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Xander Keag and his guest, Chase Jones, who has 16 years of experience focusing on the needs of the LGBTQ plus community, particularly in family law. Stay tuned. We are going to play our sponsor's commercial, which we are always happy to do. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach. Here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Xander Keag and his guest, Chase Jones. Let's get back to the show.
Which is a horrible idea. Absolutely horrible.
Have any lawsuits been brought?
Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Planned Parenthood has been in court since they passed this law, specifically because of this law. But then when they passed the bathroom bill, they did a very similar thing. They're not going to punish the trans person for using the bathroom at the courthouse. They're going to punish the county for letting the trans person use the bathroom at the courthouse. So it's a $25,000 fine the first time, $100,000 fine the next time. I have no idea how you even prove any of this in court.
Well, that's in Texas.
Yes.
On the books.
So Texas has taken this approach that as long as the government is not stepping on your rights, we're letting everybody else do it. Or we're punishing the government punishing the government, not the person, then there's nothing the Supreme Court can do about it. Other states have been more bold. North Carolina and Idaho and Kansas have really, Oklahoma, I think, has a couple of laws on the books. They've really been a little more bold about it. And the problem is you can't preemptively sue. Some very rare, I mean, there are cases you can if you know there's an imminent chance that it's going to be enforced. Or if you're part of a particular group of people and just the threat of enforcement is a problem for you, you have to have something that's justiciable. You have to have a cause that you can bring before the court, and the court has to be able to do something to solve that problem, right? But in many of these cases, we haven't had litigation because nobody's tried to do it yet, right? So no police officer has pulled someone over in Kansas and told them that you get a ticket for not having a driver's license because your driver's license was ripped out of your pocket I mean, a lot of these things haven't happened. What I highly recommend to most everybody, pay attention. Just make sure you're listening, you're reading, follow people like Erin in the Morning. She's awesome. She's, God, she's probably one of the best, when it, especially when it comes to what's happening to trans people. She has a Substack, I believe. Listen to independent news. Democracy Now!, NPR, Erin Parnas. These guys are out there reporting what really is without all the fluff and the whatever. And just make sure you're aware of your surroundings wherever you go. Even in Oregon, we have to be careful. I think there was a story yesterday on the news about total cisgender people that had nothing to do with anyone under the umbrella. They went to some event and there was a bathroom and it used to be a men's room. Now it's a women's room and has, you know, women signs and all this kind of stuff. And this woman went in and she was using the restroom in the stall and this guy walked in. Well, because it used to be a men's room, it had urinals on the wall. They weren't supposed to be used, but they were still in there, right? But it clearly was marked everywhere. And this guy comes in and then he's like flashing himself to this woman. And she's like, this is the women's restroom. She called her husband outside the restroom. And when the guy came out, they had a big confrontation. But I mean, just be aware, no matter who you are or where you are, be aware of your surroundings, the laws that will impact you where you go. Be careful traveling. And then just hang in there. Because I really think if the elections that we've been through just in the last few months are an indicator, I think by November, there's a real chance that things will change significantly. And if that happens, then a lot of this stuff may be able to be fixed and people will be more free to be themselves. It's always been fascinating to me that we live in a country where we say we're free, we're freer than everybody else, except for you and you and you and you and you over there. And it's a weird dichotomy. And also know there's a whole bunch of people like me out here who got professional degrees, not just lawyers, but therapists and doctors. And there's a whole slew of us out there that are ready and willing and happy to help however we can, wherever we can, with the skills that we've been fortunate enough to gain over the years and become professionals at. So there's space and there'll be a time when this will get better. I just worry because in the groups you read that some of these young people they're giving up. They're having a hard time finding hope. And I get that. I don't know in my 56 years that I've ever felt this way about my government at all. I don't even know that I've paid this much attention to my government in my entire lifetime. But I don't want the worst thing to happen, which is that the result of this is that so many more people we could have helped take a different pathway. I don't want that at all. So yeah. I really want people to know more than anything, we're working at it. We're working hard. We're doing everything we can. If you just hang on, it'll change.
Again, our guest today has been Chase Jones. Chase, is there some sort of resource, a website or something that you'd like to direct people to that they can check out more about what you're doing? Maybe they live in one of the states where you're licensed to practice. Again, that's Oregon, Washington, and Texas. We'll just leave off Florida since you're not doing work there right now.
Right. Yeah, they can find me at chasejoneslaw.com. And like I said, I'm always willing to help. I have a wide network. So even if you have something that's not family law related, that you're looking for practitioners that are friendly to the community, that will take good care of your case, regardless of what it is, contact me. I can hook you up with whoever you need. Even if you just have questions about what do I do with this? What do I do with that? Feel free to reach out anytime.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Chase. Glad to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me. And I really enjoyed this.
Good. Good. I enjoyed it as well. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of The Umbrella Hour. We will be back next episode, both Dr. An and I, and with another wonderful guest. So thank you for listening and have a great rest of your day, week, month, and year, depending on when you come back.